The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Derek Frost from North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading from Triangle Business Journal. Today's program is underwritten by Highwoods Properties. With its headquarters in Raleigh, North Carolina, Highwoods, a real estate investment trust, is committed to making our communities better places to live and work. Highwoods can be reached at 866-449-6637. And we start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the cover story headline, Chip Lash, How Todd Youngkin's $285 million moonshot died in Durham and what's at stake for semiconductor research and development. And the article begins inside the Triangle Business Journal with the second headline, How $285 million in CHIPS funding evaporated in Durham, with a phone call, an effort to spark innovation in semiconductor manufacturing, lost millions in funding. And this is written by Lauren Onasorge. 3 months after the phone call that crushed millions of dollars in an instant, Todd Youngkin still visibly reacts to the memory. He remembers the tears burning at the corner of his eyes, the people he had to let go, the research that won't ever happen, and there's the $285 million snuffed out in a 10-minute call. It had been a day like any other when Youngkin, CEO of the Semiconductor Research Corporation in Durham, got the cancellation call from the CHIPS Act office, which had awarded it nearly $300 million under President Joe Biden to advance semiconductor manufacturing via artificial intelligence. But with a mostly one-sided conversation on the phone, the future of Youngkin's organization was in jeopardy and, to a greater extent, America's competitiveness with Asia. The call that unraveled $285 million wasn't an audit, finding, or a missed milestone. It was a termination for convenience, wielded without warning. To Youngkin, the larger story is that America has asked industries and universities to bet the farm on national tech goals while reserving the right to walk away mid-stride. In CHIPS, that mismatch between Washington's speed and everyone else's recovery time can chill co-investment far beyond one consortium. The goal, both of SRC and the CHIPS Act dollars that it had been awarded, was to make the United States more competitive in an advanced manufacturing world consistently dominated by China and Taiwan. They need our expertise, Youngkin said of the federal government. They need our community. They need our support. My disappointment is that I couldn't help our nation. But the cuts leave a lingering question in a global environment of intense demand. Monica Gorman, managing director of Crowell Global Advisors and a former White House advisor, said the big question now that these contracts are being canceled is, what is coming instead? Before the call, Youngkin recalls the elation of seeing his professional dreams being realized. Plans were formalizing quickly for what was supposed to be the Smart USA Institute, short for Semiconductor Manufacturing and Advanced Research with Twins USA. The $285 million contract awarded by the Biden administration was SRC's big break. It had shifted its focus to the initiative meant to make the United States a global competitor in the semiconductor world. Domestic manufacturing for chips, critical in everything from rockets to power grids to electric vehicles, is virtually non-existent in the U.S. And Smart USA was one way the federal government hoped to address the vulnerability. SRC was to lead Smart USA, partnering with 121 members such as NC State University, Clemson University, Forge Nano, IBM, NVIDIA, the University of Virginia, and others. But then came the call, disclosing that the entirety of the sum was being cut before Smart USA could even execute. The cancellation prompted frenetic outreach by SRC and resulting confusion as researchers across the nation had to come to terms with the reality of the situation. For some projects, it was the end. Others said they planned to move forward with alternative funding mechanisms. For example, David Arnold, director of the Florida Semiconductor Institute out of the University of Florida, planned to leverage state dollars. All researchers Triangle Business Journal talked to said the cancellation's fallout was larger than their individual projects. Arnold said he worried about how funding uncertainties could impact other innovations even outside of the chip space. In any endeavor, when you know the rug can get pulled out from under you, it creates some hesitation, he said. What's at stake? Smart USA was the moonshot, a national consortium focused on the use of digital twins, the convergence of AI and simulation, to modernize chip manufacturing on U.S. soil. The promise was speed, faster process development, fewer defects, and a workforce trained at scale. Smart USA planned to train 110,000 workers while uniting labs around virtual manufacturing replicas to cut costs and cycle times. For Durham, it was more than a project, it was positioning. All along, Smart USA had been a bold vision at a time when supply chain limitations were making major headlines. It represented a chance to own the moment and make a real difference. With board support, Youngkin unwound older funding commitments to meet the government's match requirements. SRC rewrote its business plan and jumped from 20 to more than 50 employees focused on AI and Smart USA. It hoped to soon land 80 researchers. Offers were flying in a ferociously competitive tech labor market. It had no backup plan and didn't need one. As Youngkin recalled, $285 million was a lot of money. Then the call came. When Youngkin hung up, there was a moment of silence as he absorbed the gravity. He called his board, they strategized their talking points, and he cried a little. Next came the formal letter, which he received December 10. Then came the back-and-forth talking points between Youngkin and his team as they worked out how to tell dozens of researchers that the money was gone. Smart USA officially dissolved February 8, despite the Department of Commerce acknowledging to its leadership that it had met its performance goals. A National Institute of Standards and Technology spokesperson told TBJ that ultimately it came down to Trump's vision, not the effectiveness of the consortium. The Department of Commerce has opted to terminate its award to the Smart USA Institute as the administration's vision for the CHIPS research and development program has been refocused to advance the president's stated agenda of securing the U.S. position as the unrivaled world leader in a critical and emerging technologies, a spokesperson stated. But industry watchers characterize that statement as contradictory, as positioning the U.S. as a leader in critical semiconductor technologies was part of the original program's directives. Richard Boyd, CEO of Altism and an expert on digital twin technology, said it was a poorly considered decision to pull the funding and that the consequence isn't just lost dollars. It's about abandoning America's positioning and our state's position at the forefront of the simulation century, Boyd said. Digital twins represent the convergence of AI and simulation that will define 21st century manufacturing competitiveness. We're essentially surrendering the semiconductor digital transformation race to China, Taiwan, and South Korea. Valerie Fushi, the Democrat representing North Carolina's 4th District, which includes Durham, called the contract termination detrimental to the competitiveness of our domestic semiconductor industry and my own district. She raised concerns about breaking business commitments on a whim. Future partners will think twice before partnering with an organization that consistently fails to meet its obligations, she said. Whiplash. While all involved who spoke to TBJ characterized the cancellation as a shock, there had been inklings that the feds were reevaluating, even outside of anti-CHIPS rhetoric coming from the White House. Over the summer, Youngkin announced added scrutiny. Youngkin noticed added scrutiny on initiatives in motion. He attributed it to the new administration working to understand the CHIPS commitments. Youngkin said his team worked with officials over several months to communicate the mission to show we were aligned to both red and blue. We were serving a purple nation, he remembers thinking. I thought we were going to be the gem in their new R&D CHIPS initiative. Then the funding was canceled. Under standard federal clauses, a contracting officer can end a contract in the government's interest even when a contractor has met performance targets. Allowable costs are settled afterward. It is routine in procurement, but destabilizing when applied mid-build to multi-party R&D coalitions with dozens of hires and sub-awards. SRC wasn't alone. Over the past year, multiple entities have been hit with unexpected funding cuts, and critics of the strategy fear for the future of innovation. That includes dollars tied to the CHIPS Act, which Trump has repeatedly criticized. Cuts or reversals involving pre-approved CHIPS R&D vehicles included a proposed $825 million investment tied to Albany Nanotech and a roughly $1.1 billion advanced packaging pilot at Arizona State University, both thrown into limbo after the Commerce Department voided the NATCAST agreement and shifted the National Semiconductor Technology Center operations back under the National Institute of Standards and Technology, or NIST. And Trump himself has signaled that more cuts could be coming as he called $6.6 billion in grants to Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company, TSMC, a horrible, horrible thing. The U.S. Department of Commerce hasn't turned off the tap completely, particularly in manufacturing grants. Billions have been awarded in CHIPS and Science Act funding, from Intel, $8.5 billion, to TSMC, $6.6 billion. CHIPS-funded projects also include Vulcan Materials, a startup developing a rare earth magnet factory in Benson. Federal strategy shift. Both Biden and Trump administrations appear to have wanted the same thing, a U.S. supply of computer chips, but the strategy has diverged wildly. Unlike Biden, who pushed financial grants to bolster U.S. production, Trump's strategy was to threaten billions in tariffs. But both plans rely on the long game. Under Trump, the CHIPS office had made new commitments, such as its $1.4 billion partnership with Vulcan Elements, which will put a magnet factory with 1,000 jobs in Johnston County. But CHIPS, as it existed under Biden, is rocky. Mitch Kokai, a political analyst with the conservative John Locke Foundation, said it's always worth a pause when the government decides to get involved in the economy, especially in something where the technology and our knowledge is changing very quickly. What if, by the time a project is realized, the industry has moved on to even more advanced technology? Add in changing political administrations and federal funding strategy revamps, and not a surprise, he said. But it's the stakes of this particular mission that give many pause. Speaking at the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland this year, Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent said the world's reliance on Taiwan for high-end chip development was incredibly dangerous. If that island were blockaded, that capacity were destroyed, it would be an economic apocalypse, the New York Times quoted Bessent as saying. Alternative paths. There have been inroads from global companies making manufacturing announcements in the United States. SEMI, S-E-M-I, a global chip industry association, estimates the U.S. is on track to spend $200 billion on semiconductor plants through 2030, but the U.S. would still account for just 10% of the world's semiconductor production in 2030. And Smart USA and other initiatives like it were working to accelerate R&D and the chips of tomorrow, not just what's being produced today. An extremely capital-intensive process, said Gorman, now at Crowell Global Advisors and a former special assistant to the President for Manufacturing and Industrial Policy for the White House National Economic Council in the Biden administration. What is coming in their place isn't clear. Meanwhile, China continues to invest in chips innovation. In China, there's quite a long-term horizon in terms of the investment that's happening and the R&D that's taking place, Gorman said. The United States doing nothing to advance research in the sector isn't a viable option in a world where chips are foundational to so many different technologies, she said. In the case of Smart USA, it's also a missed opportunity for the state. North Carolina had a once-in-a-generation opportunity to become the global epicenter of semiconductor digital twin technology, said Boyd, the CEO of Altism. Durham's research ecosystem was built over decades through SRC, Research Triangle Park, and our universities. It is perfectly positioned to lead this transformation. This decision strips 110,000 planned training opportunities from North Carolina workers and undermines our state's semiconductor supply chain ambitions. In the meantime, SRC has pivoted to survival mode. Last year, SRC's R&D and education budget hit an all-time high of $109 million, he said. The plan with the institute was to hit $380 million this year. The reality will likely be between $70 million and $80 million, he said, as it works to rebuild its engine and find new industry backers. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle happenings. Written by Dane Huffman. UNC innovation boom spurs Chapel Hill. School's innovation push is turning the college town into a growing startup hub. A long effort to spark entrepreneurship is paying off in Chapel Hill. For years, the University of North Carolina has looked to leverage innovation that was based on the school's research and work. That's important for the state overall, of course, but also critical for the town as it looks to attract more companies and become an economic less dependent on the nine-month academic cycle. For example, The Right One, a company that provides replacement earbuds, is now based in Chapel Hill. Mitchell and Jillian Kincaid moved the firm from California to the Innovate Carolina Junction before moving to a larger space down Franklin Street. Jillian Kincaid is a UNC graduate, and the Junction, geared to startups, offered an appealing space. Another example is Eats to Seats, Created by 2021 UNC graduate Mary Lacey Motley, it provides concession services in more than 50 venues and also took space on Franklin Street. It's an important trend in Chapel Hill, where the town is shaking off its previous antipathy to growth. Kelly Parsons, UNC's Director of Technology Commercialization, started to see an emphasis on research that could have a tangible impact roughly 15 to 20 years ago, spurred in part by then-Chancellor Holden Thorpe. Cheryl Waddell, Director of Economic Development and Innovation Hubs, said Carolina has made a push to be more coordinated in its efforts after what had been a very decentralized entrepreneurial ecosystem. Innovate Carolina has been trying to provide that foundational piece and catalyze those connections, she said. UNC even passed a recent threshold by launching 200 startups based on its intellectual property. Waddell said Chapel Hill can have a good balance. We can have the Franklin Street people we know so well and the quaintness of the downtown area as well as an innovation ecosystem, she said. In Raleigh, NBA player's mansion sees a major price cut. If you want to live like an NBA star, now is your chance to do it at a discount. A North Raleigh mansion owned by former NBA player Chris Wilcox has seen its listing price cut by more than $3 million since first hitting the market 3 years ago. The 13,700-square-foot mansion went up for sale at $10 million in 2023. Now, the home at 12660 Boyce Mill Road is listed at $6.95 million. Wilcox played at Enloe High School and the University of Maryland before playing in the NBA for 11 years. Former Northgate Mall lands new Target store. The remake of the former Northgate Mall in Durham has landed a key anchor tenant. Minneapolis-based Target is joining the Ellerbe Square development, which will transform the defunct shopping center at 1058 West Club Boulevard. The new location will join two other Target stores in Durham. Regency Centers of Florida is the developer behind Ellerbe Square. The firm filed plans with the city of Durham last year for a 140,245-square-foot retail building along Interstate 85 and Gregson Street. Foundation leader ends her long tenure. The longtime leader of one of the Triangle's largest nonprofits is stepping down. After two decades leading the North Carolina Community Foundation, President and CEO Jennifer Toll Whiteside will step down at the end of 2026, the organization announced March 16. Whiteside is the only is only the organization's second leader since its founding in 1988. NCCF works with donors to establish charitable funds that support causes and organizations they care about. Under her leadership, donor contributions and investment returns combined to increase NCCF's assets more than sixfold to over $600 million, the organization said. And finally, Wawa property in Wilson sold to New York firm. A Pennsylvania-based gas station and convenience store that has taken eastern North Carolina by storm has seen another one of its locations sell for millions. Wilson Webster Realty, a New York LLC that lists the address of real estate firm Sure Management Company on deed records, purchased the Wawa gas station and convenience store property at 2650 Ward Boulevard in Wilson recently for $5.5 million, according to Wilson County deed records. The gas station and convenience store sits on roughly 2 acres near NC 42 and opened in September 2024. The sale highlights the growing value investors are placing on newly built convenience store properties in eastern North Carolina, particularly those leased to nationally recognized brands. We think Wawa is an excellent company that has the expertise to operate a profitable business enterprise at that location for the duration of their lease, said Billy Schur, vice president of Schur Management Company. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the top news stories. The first one, written by Kaylee Thompson. Home of Amadeo's eyed for development. Property owners seek seven-story rezoning to allow for student housing. The future is uncertain for a restaurant that's been serving the NC State University community for more than 60 years, as the property owner seeks more height for the site. Wolfgang Investment Properties, LLC, owned by Rodney Bird, filed a rezoning application with the City of Raleigh for 3911 Western Boulevard, looking to go from 3 stories to 7 stories. The property is a small retail strip that is home to Amadeo's Italian Restaurant, Mecca Market, and Akhenaten Palace. The rezoning application states the taller height would allow for more student housing in close proximity to the NC State campus by redeveloping the existing commercial building. The application also states that the proposed project would be a multifamily building, but does not mention incorporating other uses like retail or restaurant. Amadeo's opened in 1963 and has served as a prime location for NC State students, alumni, and fans ever since. Its walls are littered with Wolfpack memorabilia. When asked if the restaurant would be closing, relocating, or part of the new development, owner David Harris declined to comment. He added that ownership is focused on continuing to operate and serve our customers as usual. If a rezoning is approved and site plans move forward, it would take at least 2 to 3 years before permits would be issued. That would give ownership time to relocate if necessary. Bird is a minority owner in the restaurant, along with having a minority ownership in Sammy's Tap and Grill and Wahari Japanese Restaurant in Raleigh. Bird did not respond to inquiry. Wolfgang Investment Properties LLC bought the Western Boulevard site for $2.3 million in 2015, according to Wake County property records. The 1.5-acre property is assessed at $2.9 million. Collier Marsh of Parker Poe is representing the LLC for the rezoning application. Marsh did not return requests for comment. Our next story is written by Kate Tracy. The headline: Entertainment venue closes at Ironworks. Jaguar Bolera shutters after less than 2 years at Raleigh Development. An indoor entertainment venue has abruptly closed at Raleigh Ironworks less than 2 years after opening. Jaguar Bolera, located off Atlantic Avenue at 2221 Ironworks Drive, Suite 90, closed due to unforeseen circumstances, according to signs posted on the entrance, March 16. This was an incredibly difficult decision to make, and we sincerely apologize for any inconvenience this may cause to our valued guests and community, the announcement said. We are deeply grateful for the support, memories, and time you shared with us over the years. Robert Thompson, who owned the business when it opened in May 2024, told Triangle Business Journal he had not been involved with Jaguar Bolera for more than a year and a half and was unaware it had closed. The two-story, 23,000-square-foot venue featured duckpin bowling, darts, foosball, and karaoke. Guests poured their own drinks from 73 self-serve taps, including cocktails, beer, and wine. It was a key addition to Grub Ventures' Ironworks development and shared the same building as the Forge Apartments. Representatives from Grub Ventures could not immediately be reached for comment. Chef Manny Barella, who placed fifth in season 21 of Top Chef that year and was a 2022 James Beard Award semifinalist, created the Southern Mexican menu at Jaguar Bolera. Jaguar Bolera employed 125 people when it opened. Jaguar Bolera's operators had planned to open a pickleball venue across the street at Salvage Yard, but that never opened. The brand also planned to open in Atlanta, but never did. Meanwhile, Thompson's other planned pickleball entertainment venues called Camp Pickle in the Denver area have also stalled out. Thompson is the founder and former CEO of Punch Bowl Social, that at one point had more than 20 locations, but now lists 13 locations on its website. VinFast slashes North Carolina hiring target by 80%, and this is written by Ben Tobin. VinFast says it will resume construction on its electric vehicle plant in Chatham County this year, but the company is drastically reducing its hiring target. The Vietnamese manufacturer is reducing its original hiring target of 7,500 local workers to 1,400, according to Michael Smith, president of Chatham County Economic Development Corporation. The company said during an earnings call March 16th it plans to resume construction at the factory this year. It broke ground in 2023, but VinFast has since delayed its original timeline for starting production at the Triangle Innovation Point megasite by 4 years to 2028. According to an option to purchase real estate signed in November 2022, if the company doesn't create 1,750 jobs by the end of 2026 or start operations by July 2026, the state can buy back all or parts of the 1,765-acre site within Triangle Innovation Point. Smith said that even at a reduced number, this still represents a major new employer for the region. We support the project and appreciate the significant help of our partners at the state. In Wake County, Siemens to open new factories, add 350 jobs. This is written by Lauren Onasorge. Siemens is opening new factories in Wake County as part of a $165 million investment in the Carolinas to support the booming data center industry. The German company is adding two 140,000-square-foot facilities in the region. One is in Knightdale off U.S. 64 Business. The other is in Wendell, separate from Siemens' existing operations there. Brian Dula, regional president of electrification and automation at Siemens, said the expansion will bring another 350 jobs to the region over the next 3 years, on top of the nearly 1,000 employees the company already has here. The surge, he said, is being driven by AI data centers. Siemens plans to add 100 jobs in Knightdale by the end of this year and 50 in Wendell, Dula said. Siemens supplies the gear that keeps data centers running, power distribution components that move electricity from the utility grid to the racks themselves. And the AI data center boom, Dula said, shows no signs of slowing. Combine that with U.S. tariff policies boosting the case for domestic manufacturing, and Siemens moved ahead. It just made sense to invest locally, he said. The Knightdale site will come online in April. It will handle medium voltage, switchgear, and integration products. The Wendell plant, set to open in July, will focus on protection automation and advanced electronics. Proximity to existing operations helps, Dula said, but the real draw was the Triangle's training pipeline. Siemens' main Wendell hub includes a power academy, and partnerships such as its work with Wake Tech have created a training ecosystem that would be difficult to duplicate elsewhere. The company also needed both factories operational by 2026. And our next story is written by Zach Ezone. The headline, Raleigh factory violations impact French firm. FDA's warning letter causes a financial hit to French medical imaging firm. Disruptions at a pharmaceutical manufacturing facility in Raleigh continue to weigh on parent company Gerbet's finances, and that's spelled G-U-E-R-B-E-T. As the French medical imaging firm works to fully restore operations, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration in October issued a warning letter to Liebel Flarsheim Company, LLC, a subsidiary of Gerbet, outlining multiple violations at the Raleigh site. Gerbet cites the situation at the facility as one of two primary factors that contributed to revenue declines last year. The company's full-year revenue in the Americas dropped 3.8% last year at constant exchange rates. This decline was concentrated in the fourth quarter and was due to delays in releasing batches from its Raleigh site. Overall, Gerbet's revenue declined 3.5% last year to around $900 million. In addition to the situation in Raleigh, the company reported a decline of activity in France. Gerbet also reported about a $100 million non-cash impairment charge tied to the Raleigh situation and an approximately $11 million provision related to the future destruction of specific inventories at the site. The company initiated a remediation plan in the fourth quarter to address the FDA's concerns. The agency's warning letter summarized significant violations of current Good Manufacturing Practice, or CGMP, regulations following an inspection of the site from March 25 through April 8, 2025. These regulations govern how drug products are manufactured, processed, and packaged. Gerbet said it has put a new management team in place, supported by external experts, the company said when releasing its 2025 financial results. The company is also upgrading the plant with new processes and equipment. The corrective actions undertaken, including the modernization of equipment and processes, aim to respond as quickly as possible to the FDA's requests and thus allow a return to a normative release rate for batches produced at the plant, the company said. Gerbet, which is publicly traded on the European markets, took over the facility at 8800 Durant Road in 2015 after acquiring Mallinckrodt's Contrast Media and Delivery Systems business, which included Liebel Flarsheim. Gerbet produces contrast agents and solutions used in medical imaging to improve diagnostic accuracy and support clinical decision-making. In a previous annual report, the company described the Raleigh facility as a filling plant for its X-ray products, Optoray and Conray, and MRI products, Dotarem and Eluserem. Implementing its compliance plan for the facility has delayed the release of product batches manufactured at the site. The company said this batch release rate was increased since the fourth quarter and will continue to do so throughout 2026. Gerbe plans to have the site ready for a new FDA inspection by the end of 2026. The company expects to operate the facility under normal conditions for the full year in 2027. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the reporters' pages. The first one we come to is Transportation and Tech. And this page is written by Lauren Onasorge. Google to invest another $1 billion in NC. Big Tech keeps investing billions in North Carolina as artificial intelligence fuels demand for data center operations. Google plans to invest $1 billion over 2 years into its data center infrastructure in Lenoir in Caldwell County, the company said March 13. Google's operation in Lenoir already has about 400 employees. The investment is tied to a 2024 incentives deal with the county. The project is planned for approximately 60 acres in Lenoir adjacent to Google's existing data center campus. Tech giants are racing to expand and build new data centers to power the rapid rise of artificial intelligence, but data center proposals in other parts of the state have been controversial. A developer recently pulled plans for one in Apex due to local pushback. The region has become a hub for data centers. Apple and Microsoft are investing heavily in nearby Catawba County, and Facebook parent Meta is funneling money into its complex in Rutherford County. Last year, Apple said it would put $175 million towards building a 240,000-square-foot data center on land the company owns in Maiden. Closer to the Triangle, Amazon has said it will invest $10 billion to develop a data center hub in Richmond County. Wolfspeed looks to target big tech. Durham firm says its silicon carbide technology can aid rush to AI. Wolfspeed is making its loudest play yet for the data center market as it works to line up big tech partners for its silicon carbide technology, a notable shift for a firm long associated with its push in the electric vehicle sector. Under CEO Robert Fuhrer, the Durham Semiconductor Company has been exploring new verticals, and this month it put a spotlight on one of the biggest, the infrastructure needed to power artificial intelligence. Wolfspeed said its 300-millimeter silicon carbide technology could help enable the advanced computing systems expected later this decade. The science is complex, but the business case is simple, according to Wolfspeed. AI workloads demand more power, more speed, and dramatically better heat management, and Wolfspeed believes its material can solve some of those problems. AI is not stopping, Chief Technology Officer Elif Balka said. If you listen to the big hyperscalers, we're just seeing the beginning of it, and of course it plays into our core strengths. She added that conversations are happening with all of the big names. Silicon carbide is Wolfspeed's core product, a tougher, more heat-resistant alternative to traditional silicone. With data center applications, Balka said, we can add a lot of value here. But interest doesn't automatically translate into adoption. For Wolfspeed, widespread buy-in from cloud providers and chip companies would be required before demand reaches the scale needed to fully ramp up its future Siler City operations. The push isn't limited to big tech. Wolfspeed is also making an appeal in Washington. Recently, a congressional delegation sent a letter to Michael Kratsios, director of the White House's Office of Science and Technology Policy, urging the Trump administration to recognize silicon carbide as a critical component of the nation's AI action plan. And finally, RDU at risk of losing flight to upstate New York. One of Raleigh-Durham International Airport's gateways to Canada could end this year if the U.S. Department of Transportation switches up a key grant program. The Breeze Airways flight to Ogdensburg in upstate New York, just across the border from Ottawa, Canada, is backed by millions in government grants. But Breeze has competition for those incentives, and the alternative carrier isn't interested in RDU. Breeze's essential air service contract with the DOT expires in October. With a new call for proposals now issued, SkyWest has stepped forward with a plan that includes Ogdensburg flights to Chicago and Washington, D.C., but not RDU. The Essential Air Service program is designed to incentivize service in underserved communities, places where airlines otherwise couldn't make the routes work. Under its current 2-year agreement, approved in 2024, Breeze was due nearly $8.9 million the first year and $9.1 million the second, initially to fly between Ogdensburg, and Washington, D.C. Breeze received approval to switch the route to RDU last year. Breeze hopes to continue the arrangement and has proposed a $5 million subsidy, including 4% annually. SkyWest submitted a proposal for service between Ogdensburg and both O'Hare International and Washington Dulles. It's proposing 12 weekly round trips for 4 years, with subsidies starting at nearly $6 million the first year and rising to more than $6.5 million by year four. And along with this article, there is a big number, $155.5 million. Projected annual operating expenses for Raleigh-Durham International Airport, a nearly 7% increase. And now we turn to the real estate and development page. This is written by Kaylee Thompson. New homes to rise in a rural setting. Davidson Homes to construct 16 homes on land near Jordan Lake. A small community of estate lots is coming to a wealthy area near Jordan Lake. Davidson Homes will soon start construction on Ashland, a 16-home community north of Highway 1 and adjacent to Toll Brothers' Jordan Point residential community in New Hill. Home prices start at $864,000 and can top $1 million depending on design choice. While Davidson Homes typically builds larger residential communities, Perry Verrill, vice president of land acquisition, said the company made an exception because of the location. Construction will begin in the next 30 to 45 days with full build-out in 2 to 3 years. He said Davidson expects the community to sell out within 12 months. Three home sites have already sold to buyers. The remaining lots were sold in a land bank agreement to DW Partners of New York City. DW Partners paid $4 million for the lots per Wake County deed records. Buyers can select from 4 floor plans ranging from 3 to 6 bedrooms. The homes are between 2,501 and 4,252 square feet. Ashland is at 9613 Horton Road in a wooded area. It's tucked back in there, so it's off the beaten path a little bit, Verrill said. Some folks like to live in a big 1,000-unit plan development with all kinds of amenities. There's so many of those in the Triangle, he said. But some folks still want a more rural setting, a larger lot, perhaps the ability to put their own pool in the backyard. So this is probably a different buyer than would buy in one of the large planned unit developments. Living in a 16-lot community, you'll probably know all your neighbors, and it'll create more of a community feel than you get in a large development. In North Hills, Kane reveals apartment tower with rooftop pool. Kane Realty Corporation is planning a 20-story residential tower as it expands the North Hills Innovation District along the Raleigh Beltline. The real estate developer submitted site plans to the city for the second phase of the billion-dollar Innovation District. Kane is planning a mixed-use tower facing Interstate 440 adjacent to the Midline Raleigh site. The building is the second of three buildings unveiled for the second phase. Construction has started on another building called The Tributary, an upscale apartment complex that will have 332 units when completed. For the 20-story tower, there will be 357 units, 1,425 square feet of retail space, and 5 levels of parking with 375 spaces. Site plans show there will be 63 studios, 159 one-bedroom units, 127 two-bedroom units, and 8 with 3 bedrooms. The 19th floor will have penthouses, according to the plans. The building will feature a fitness center, outdoor amenity space on the 6th floor, and an amenity deck with swimming pool, covered porch, and club room on the 20th floor. The retail space will face a new street Kane Realty will build between the tower and the 6-story tributary building. The building will be on 2.03 acres at 700 St. Albans Drive. New York firm pays $58 million for Cary Building. A large property in Northwest Cary has sold for nearly $60 million shortly after landing a big-name tenant. Vigilant Holdings Real Estate of New York City acquired the Press Building for $58.3 million per Wake County deed records. The more than 260,000-square-foot building near Lake Crabtree is solely occupied by Millennium Print Group, which moved into the building in June 2025. Millennium Print Group, a subsidiary of the Pokemon Company, produces trading cards and other products. Texas-based Alloy Properties, backed by TPG of New York, purchased the Press Building in 2021, which used to house the East Coast distribution hub of the Oxford University Press. Alloy teamed up with Charlotte-based Lincoln Harris to renovate and convert the building into Flex Lab and office space. The renovation was completed in 2023. The building sat empty until early 2025 when Millennium Print Group signed a lease for the full 262,400 square feet of space. And finally, former Amazon space in Durham sells for $26 million. A former Amazon delivery station in Durham has sold despite being vacant. Atlanta Property Group, in a joint venture with TPG Angelo Gordon of New York, acquired the North 70 Distribution Center, according to Durham County deed records. The 261,926 square foot building north of Highway 98, between Interstate 885 and Junction Road, sold for $26.7 million. The building has been vacant since Amazon left in 2022. Despite that, the building sold for more than it did in 2019 when Amazon had just moved in. At the time, Northbridge Partners of Massachusetts paid $16 million for the property. 3 years before that, the building sold for $7.3 million. The warehouse is a Class B building built in 1973. And now we turn to the Greater Triangle, this page written by Ben Tobin. Quintiles founder sells coastal land. LLC managed by Dennis Gilling sells 380 acres near Topsail to Boston firm. A Boston-based company that bills itself as one of the nation's most vibrant and forward-looking developers of residential master-planned communities has spent tens of millions to acquire land in one of North Carolina's fastest-growing counties. Hawksbill LVI owner, an LLC that lists the address of Freehold Capital Management on deed records, purchased approximately 380 acres off Country Club Drive near Topsail Beach in Pender County for $31 million last month, according to Pender County deed records. The land is vacant. The seller, Hampstead Properties, is a Durham-based LLC managed by Dennis Gillings, according to North Carolina Secretary of State filings. Gillings is founder and former chairman of clinical research company Quintiles, now ICVIA. Population growth, along with strong demand for second homes and retirement communities, has drawn large-scale residential developers to the coast, particularly the wider Wilmington region, including Pender County. The area has increasingly become a target for national firms looking to build master-planned communities as buyers continue to seek out coastal living within driving distance of larger metros such as Wilmington and the Raleigh area. Andrew Smith, Executive Vice President for Freehold Capital Management, said the company will use the land for predominantly residential with some commercial uses. He declined to share how many residential units the company is planning. We have broke ground and we'll have the first planning area completed sometime in summer of 2027, Smith said. Freehold Communities, an affiliate of Freehold Capital Management, has 14 projects across country. One of those includes the Legacy at Jordan Lake in Chapel Hill in Chatham County, which has close to 500 home sites. In Harnett County, million-dollar homes coming near Holly Springs. A custom home builder is looking to bring million-dollar homes to a market where that stock is hard to find. Blue Willow Homes of Durham is planning a 19-home community called Walker's Creek off NC Highway 42 and Rollins Mill Road in Harnett County. The community will have a Holly Springs address. Home prices will start around $900,000 and could push above $1.5 million, according to Todd Eschenbaugh, president of Blue Willow Homes. The project highlights a gap in Harnett County's market, which has seen a surge of residential development in recent years, but relatively little luxury inventory. As population growth spreads south from Wake County, developers say there is increasing demand from higher-income buyers. Eschenbaugh said originally his company was looking at building at a lower price point, but after talking with county leadership, they decided to change their plans. We have a lot of homes being built down here, but we have some higher-end buyers moving into the Harnett County side, and we don't have any luxury homes for that buyer, Eschenbaugh said. There's just not a whole lot available. Construction is beginning in the next couple of months, with the first move-ins possibly occurring at the end of this year. In Clayton, Chipotle property sold for $5 million in bustling corridor. A relatively new location for a popular Mexican restaurant chain has sold for millions in Clayton. River Place One, a Raleigh-based LLC, purchased the Chipotle Mexican Grill property at 12023 Clayton Boulevard for close to $5 million this month, according to Johnston County deed records. This is the only Chipotle in Clayton's town limits. It opened about a year ago. The sale reflects rising investor interest in commercial real estate in Clayton as the town continues to see rapid growth. As thousands of new residents move to the area, national retailers and restaurant chains have expanded their presences, and investors have increasingly targeted newly built tenant-occupied properties as stable assets tied to the town's expanding population base. River Place One LLC, lists an R. David Boyce, an attorney, as the manager, according to North Carolina Secretary of State filings. And finally, in Kenley, Florida firm pays $5 million for shopping center off I-95. A shopping center in a town of fewer than 2,000 residents has sold for millions of dollars. Kenley Church Street Associates, a Davie, Florida-based LLC, purchased the Food Lion-anchored shopping center at 406 South Church Street in Kenley for close to $5 million on March 10, according to Johnston County deed records. The seller of the roughly 10-acre property, Charlotte's New South Properties, purchased it for nearly $2 million in 2021. The sale reflects increasing activity in eastern Johnston County as growth that once concentrated around Clayton continues to spread. The shopping center has a prime location by two major thoroughfares that connect Kenley with other parts of North Carolina, I-95 and U.S. 301. And now we turn to retail and restaurants. This is written by Kate Tracy. Waverly Place to get sandwich spot. East Cut Sandwich Bar to add a third location in revamped Carey Center. The third location is on the way for a local business that aims to cultivate sandwich utopia. East Cut Sandwich Bar is leasing space at 302 Colonnades Way, Suite 209 in Carey's Waverly Place. The owners plan to open this fall after design and construction. The shop will be 3,300 square feet and combine two suites, the former Capriati Sandwich Shop and the former L.A. Bikini space next door. East Cut co-founders Brad Bankos and Steve Wunsch have long eyed Carey and Morrisville for expansion, as the towns are far enough away from East Cut's locations in Durham and Raleigh, Raleigh Ironworks, to avoid any cannibalization problems. Plus, we just thought the market has been growing so much and a lot of transplants from around the country, which we feel like we can help speak to, and tons of families, which are really our bread and butter customers, Banco said. The owners liked Waverly Place for its proximity to Cocoa Booth Amphitheater and Wake Med Carey Hospital. The pair looked at downtown Carey as well, but were concerned about weekday traffic and could not find the right space. Waverly felt really good because it's that lifestyle center that draws a lot of families and weekend activities, Banco said. When we acquired Waverly Place 4 years ago, one of our key goals was to curate a best-in-class mix of local and regional dining. East Cut delivers exactly that, Hines Managing Director Paul Zarian said in a statement. Hines has plans to remake a portion of Waverly Place that includes the Cine Bistro Theater into hundreds of apartments and commercial space. East Cut opened in 2018 in Durham, followed by Raleigh Ironworks in 2023. Raleigh Ironworks has seen stronger weekend sales, while Durham has more consistent weekday sales, the owner said. Carey gets its third Whole Foods location. Carey is getting its third Whole Foods market. Whole Foods Market, headquartered in Austin, Texas, has signed a lease for a 30,000-square-foot space at 930 High House Road in Carey's Preston Corners Shopping Center, according to Wake County deed records. Whole Foods, owned by Amazon, will occupy space formerly held by Lowe's Foods, which closed in May. North Pond Partners, a real estate firm based in Chicago, owns Preston Corners. A spokesperson from North Pond confirmed the Whole Foods lease but did not share an expected opening date. She said North Pond will upgrade the rest of the center in conjunction with the Whole Foods build-out. We look forward to continuing to serve the Carey community with high-quality natural and organic products and an unparalleled grocery shopping experience, a Whole Foods spokesperson said in an email. The lease with North Pond is for 20 years with 5-year extension options. The store will be Whole Foods' seventh in the Triangle, according to the grocer's website. Carey's existing Whole Foods stores are at Waverly Place and the Alston Town Center off Highway 55. Both stores are about 6 miles from the new location. Northeast Raleigh to add indoor amusement space. Another indoor amusement park is heading to Northeast Raleigh. Lucky Cat Entertainment Park, owned by Andy Zhang, will occupy 21,136 square feet at Terrymore Square at the corner of Capitol Boulevard and New Hope Church Road, according to a Lee & Associates leasing brochure. The venue at 3901 Capitol Boulevard, Unit 153, will include play structures, trampoline area, party rooms, merchandising, and bubble tea area, according to a permit filed this month. The permit valuation is $2 million. The venue will take over a space that was formerly Badcock Home Furniture. Badcock closed 35 stores in the southeastern U.S. in 2024 after its parent company, Cones Incorporated, filed for bankruptcy. Entertainment venues are popping up around the region to serve the Triangle's growing number of young families. A handful of other indoor entertainment venues are in close proximity to Lucky Cat, including Defy Raleigh, Urban Air Trampoline, and Adventure Park and Party Shack. Frank Gallucci with Wendell-based FGA Associates is the architect on the Lucky Cat Entertainment Park project. The shopping center is owned by Raleigh Terrymore Square, LLC, a Raleigh-based LLC whose manager is Tony Gee, according to North Carolina Secretary of State filings. Built in 1988, the 212,813 square foot center last sold in 2019 for $19 million, according to property records. And our last reporter page is On the Coast. This is written by Dane Huffman. Brunswick to add more 55-plus homes. Community will add 3,700 age-restricted homes north of Calabash. North Carolina's fastest-growing county has approved thousands of age-restricted housing units. The Brunswick County Planning Board voted unanimously during a meeting recently to approve a plan development application for Canopy, a 1,000-acre master-planned community off Gwynn Road, north of Calabash, that calls for 3,700 age-restricted, age 55 and older, homes and 50 acres of commercial space. Unlike in many counties, Brunswick County's Planning Board, not the Board of Commissioners, has final say on planned developments unless an appeal is filed. The project comes as Brunswick County continues to see a surge of retirees moving to the coastal region, making it both the oldest and fastest aging county in North Carolina. Drawn by its coastal lifestyle, relatively lower cost of living, and proximity to the Wilmington area, retirees have fueled demand for developments like these. Local leaders and developers say the demographic shift is reshaping the county's housing mix. The developer is California's Integral Communities, which has a Charlotte office. Paul Tryon, Senior Vice President of Land Acquisition and Development for the company, said during the March 9 meeting, "We've taken our time with this project." "We've gone to meetings," Tryon said. "We talked to many of you. We listened carefully. We talked to our neighbors. We want to ensure a project that not only brings quality of life and contemporary design, but also listens to what's going on in the community." Tryon told TBJ the project will take 10 to 15 years to build out. A planning board member called the project a plan that's well laid out and well thought out. More than one in three residents today in Brunswick County are 65 or older. In Wilmington, yacht firm scoops up Florida business. A Wilmington yacht company that went public last year is moving fast to expand. Off the Hook Yachts is acquiring Apex, a marine services company based in South Florida. The $5.5 million deal will give Off the Hook four facilities in the Florida market, plus Apex's service team. Off the Hook is focused on the resale market in the boat industry. It went public in November at $4 per share and raised around $15 million. The company said it expects to generate $30 million in additional revenue with the addition of Apex. Off the Hook reported nearly $99 million in revenue for 2024, up from $91.8 million the previous year, according to SEC filings. The Florida facilities include storage and service locations, haul-out capability up to 150 metric tons, and vessels up to 130 feet, as well as in-house service and repair teams. It will give Off the Hook the capacity to process the vast majority of its acquired inventory internally, according to a news release. The integration of these capabilities is expected to generate millions of dollars in annual cost savings by eliminating third-party service dependencies, reducing transportation expenses, accelerating turnaround times, and enabling higher quality refurbishments, said CEO Brian John. New Bern land primed for housing sold. More than 100 acres primed for housing in a growing coastal community has sold to investors. FFD Bayberry, a Greenville-based LLC, purchased 108 vacant acres off Bayberry Park Drive for $2.8 million in New Bern last month, according to Craven County deed records. The sale price comes to about $26,000 per acre. The land sits adjacent to the west of Bayberry Park, a neighborhood by national home builder D.R. Horton. Homes in the neighborhood were priced in the upper $300,000. The LLC lists brothers Stephen and Barton Horn as managers, according to North Carolina Secretary of State filings. The pair also manage ENC Land and Development, according to filings. According to Craven County Land Records, the land is suitable for residential development. New Bern, located at the confluence of the Neuse River and the Trent River, is a prime location off U.S. 70 on the way to the coast. And finally, New Hampshire apartment firm targets Havelock. A New Hampshire investor that has spent tens of millions acquiring apartment complexes in North Carolina is now setting its sights on the coast. EWT 100, an LLC that deed records show shares the address of Keystone Management Company, paid $3.75 million last month for the Gatewood Apartments community off Legacy Lane in the city of Havelock, according to Craven County deed records. The complex sits on roughly 6.4 acres per property records. The 50-unit apartment community was constructed over 20 years ago. Located roughly 30 minutes down U.S. 70 from New Bern, Havelock hasn't quite had the same growth success, but the city did gain about 700 residents between 2020 and 2024. And with our remaining time, we'll read some of the big numbers that are spread throughout the Triangle Business Journal. The first one, 165,000, the number of people in Brunswick County who are 65 or over by the year 2060, according to the state demographer's office. $8 million, the amount GRI Harvest 2 LLC, which lists its address with First Washington Realty in Bethesda, Maryland, paid for a Lowe's Foods property at 9650 Strickland Road in Raleigh. And as we wrap up, I'd like to mention that today's program is underwritten by Highwoods Properties. With its headquarters in Raleigh, North Carolina, Highwoods, a real estate investment trust, is committed to making our communities better places to live and work. Highwoods can be reached at 866-449-6637. And we've run out of time for today's episode of Triangle Business Journal. Be sure to listen next time. I hope you enjoyed it. Again, I'm Derek Frost, reading for North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. The broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.